Welcome back to Around the Wheel with Brett Tax. Today I have Patreon supporter Zach Parrish. Zach Parrish pilots an Africa Twin 1100 Africa Sports, and his bike is a DCT model. We are going to be diving into, and not to make a funny out of this, but diving into sand and gravel and really loose surfaces. Zach, what makes Zach so special today is Zach is just like most of you that are listening today. Zach, why don't you give us a little background on how we ended up in today's conversation?
Somehow I knew you were going to talk about the whole diving into sand thing, but that's a whole other thing. So I started off riding a 1977 Yamaha 125 Enduro that I bought off my next door neighbor for like $50 and rode it until it fell apart. And that bike was like the Terminator. It was amazing. As I got older, I eventually decided to get a real motorcycle that I could take on the street and get a license for. And my first one was a Suzuki SV650S, a 2005. That thing was
fun.
Oh my God, it was so good. It was like, it's like an F-16. It's so nimble and it'll just go wherever you want it to go. But I rode that for 7 years and wanted to get something different, but I was still into street bikes. So I got drawn to the Harley Davidson V-Rod. So I had a 2012 big black thing that makes you feel like Batman or Judge Dredd. And I rode that for 7 years and then wanted something different yet again. And this was about this time last year. And I discovered that adventure motorcycles actually existed. I didn't know about them. I'd only been looking at low, slung, or really fast and powerful things. And I saw the Africa Twin. They had just announced that there was a new one coming with a whole bunch of really cool, hot features. So I pre-ordered one of those. I took delivery in April, and now here we are.
When we get into talking about sand, there will be things about clutch versus not clutch. And you went with the DCT, which is going to make this a very special conversation. Yep. Why did you go for the DCT? You're an experienced rider, so obviously the clutch is not something you're afraid of.
No, not at all. In fact, I get a lot of satisfaction from, you know, handling the clutch and shifting gears. I started off really just morbid curiosity. I went to the Honda dealership and I just talked to them like, hey, I've heard about the Africa Twin. And I had only just read about DCT, and there's a lot of really mixed opinions on that. So I test rode one. And about halfway through my, like, I don't know, 30, 45 minute test ride, I was like, you know what? This is a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. I totally get why folks eschew them and just want to focus on, they want to do all that shifting themselves. That makes perfect sense to me. But there is something to be said for when you just want to get out and you just want to ride around and look at the scenery, not really having to think about that.
Yeah, I don't want to make this just a talk about the DCT specifically, because sure, we could probably have a conversation about that. I love understanding why you wanted to go that way. One of the things I've heard people say about the DCT that I think is so far off the mark is that the DCT is for novice riders or for beginner guys or guys who struggle with the clutch. And that to me is the absolute biggest fallacy about that motorcycle and that particular technology out there.
Now that I own one, I agree with you. I think I went into it thinking that might actually be a thing and that I was handicapping myself, but you come to realize very quickly that it's really just a different way to ride. In fact, it has its own very unique challenges, particularly when you get off the pavement and you have to really pay close attention to your throttle inputs because you don't have that clutch bailout. And you can get yourself into a lot of trouble very quickly with just a simple bump in the road that you weren't ready for.
Whiskey throttling on a DCT really only kind of has one scenario. You get to ride
launch
it out. And yeah, whatever happens at the other end, that's the only surprise. But there's definitely, there's no safety valve on that. So that's when we get into body position and the concept that a lot of people know from when I was doing the Moto Truck series about the weightless rider and how critical and important that is. And I think that's going to segue us into what our primary chat is. You went out and you're in North Carolina. And I've been there. There's a lot of sand in North Carolina. And you went out and did some riding and discovered that is a skill set unto its own. So let's kind of dive into this. And what kind of issues are you running into for those that are listening and for you most specifically? Let's see if we can work through those and make you better.
Sand is one of those things that you just don't run into on a street bike. In fact, I'm going to walk that back just a little bit. Once you get really into the core of street riding and you understand what those high traction environments feel on the bike, and then, hopefully you never have, but in my case, like I have laid a bike down a few times. And your brain and your body and your nervous system builds up this immediate reaction to losing traction on the bike. And everything about you just screams, oh my God, we're about to die, because you know what that feels like to lose traction and have the bike go down. So sand is one of those things where it's not like gravel, where gravel will kick you over an inch or two, and it's a little startling the first couple of times you do it, but that's fine. Sand is just this constant throw. It just constantly moves underneath you. And if you're not ready for it, or heaven forbid, it comes on a turn that you weren't ready for, I still haven't quite figured out exactly what the bike wants me to do in those situations.
And there's two different situations we're talking about here. So one is on the street. The sand on the street is dangerous. And that's what we know as street riders. It's just, there's no way getting around that. You need to be vertical. You can't be going through fast with a lot of side angle. You're going to slip. And the other thing that's really scary about sand on the street, I do think you're right. This is something that we carry with us when we live the street and we start trying to really do off-road riding. And that is the fact that if we slip on the street, not just sand, but also gravel, the chances of regaining that traction, if it's a large patch, is fairly small. Unless it's just a really kind of a little hop or a little skip where you can hook back up. Once you start sliding, you're gone. And I also think this is why when we get into gravel, people freak out, because a hard packed gravel road, to me, is far more concerning and far more dangerous than dirt and gravel on a trail, because it's hard packed underneath with loose surface on the top. And if it's thick gravel, I'm good with it. It's that thin gravel, just that spattering across the top of a hard-packed road, whether it's asphalt or hard-pack, that's really dangerous, because there isn't a recovery to that. If we're already sliding, we've already made the mistakes and we're paying the penalty now. That's one issue. Getting into the deep sand, that's where we start having to change the way we look at the sand and start trusting the machine more. I did a little video on the Brett Tax YouTube channel on Rake and Trail. For me, I was just, okay, let's just prove a point. How can I do this? So I rode down the mountain, hands off the bike, talking in front of me, because that's how I talk best, is if my hands move, and just talking about Rake and Trail and how stable the bike is. And you know, I also did it on the freeway at speed, but I chose not to put it into that video. But knowing that that bike is stable, and that's one of the things I've started doing over the years, is I keep testing and checking my faith in the motorcycle. Because even though we understand the dynamics of it, the rake, the trail, the engineering, that it's all there, that somehow this bike is supposed to stay upright and we're not supposed to fall, we still pretty much have to have some faith, because that's kind of invisible to us. And I started off by just taking my hands off, just slightly off the bars, to see how far I would take the hands off and how far I could ride. And that's just on gravel roads initially, or on pavement. And then it was hands out to my side. And then it was standing up and hands in the air. And I kept kind of evolving my trust, how far I can get away from this bike and allow it to ride. And then also on surfaces, hands off, going through gravel, through potholes. Well, what about hands off, going downhill with big rocks? And so I've kept evolving. As I become comfortable with something, I push the limit a little bit farther. This is one of those keys to overcoming the challenge that you're talking about, getting in the sand and having that fear, is going, okay, I don't want to dive in so far that I'm in pure panic mode, where my body is like, no way, this isn't going to happen, where my brain is so overwhelmed with concern and distrust and fear and not understanding and lack of experience, because it's a combination of all this that makes me go, this is really a scary situation. But find something where there's something recoverable, where you go, even if my faith isn't true and I go through this little patch of sand, I can still recover. And then go, oh, the bike actually worked. The problem is you're carrying that idea of sand and dirt and loose on the street over into that deeper or more real off-road environment.
You're absolutely right. You do take a little bit of that fear of sand or in like immediate low traction kind of jumping out at you on the street along with you. I think you can kind of adapt to that, particularly in those scenarios where you know you can just plow straight through it, where you're already vertical, you're already going in a straight line, you know you can really just commit. And after the first couple of times noticing, okay, the handlebars are going to joggle a little bit, we'll be okay. After that, the next stage is how you start handling turns. And then when you combine the two, where sand suddenly shows up on a turn and not necessarily one that is nicely bermed either, It's just, you're riding along, minding your business in the woods, and suddenly there's a 4-inch deep pit of sand that you have to go around it. And I'm not quite sure yet what the bike really wants me to do to handle that. So the situation I found myself in, I was taking the Africa Twin through some trails that we have here as a motocross park. And right now, I'm not quite convinced that the Africa Twin is really happy on single track stuff because it is so heavy. But that could also that could have a lot to do with my current skill set as well. I'm not going to count that out. Also, it was like over 100 degrees and it was miserable. But I did find that as I was trying to maneuver, as soon as like there'd be a turn and a little bit of sand, that front end would want to tuck, or I wasn't quite sure exactly where my body positioning should be to handle those kinds of things.
You're absolutely correct. We don't fall over when we go straight. If we go through deep sand in a straight line, that front end will wiggle back and forth. The bike tracks with it. If we stay relaxed, if we keep our momentum, chance of getting to the other side are almost guaranteed. It is the corners that we fall down on. And as you put it, the berm is easy because the berm means that when I go through the corner as the bike leans, as long as I lean at the same angle that bike basically stays teed into the ground. When we're riding straight up and down, we're square to the ground. And if that berm comes up and I lean equal to the berm, then I'm still square to the ground. It's just pushing the force straight down. Slipping off of that is really, really low. But without those berms, and if you're on single track trails and you're on a big bike, now all of a sudden you do have to worry about that slip, especially if it's off camber. And this is where we get back into that idea of the weightless rider. And on the Africa Twin, the DCT specifically, it is extremely critical that you stay in front of that force that's pushing you. And the way I actually came up with this when I was teaching in India. I teach a lot of formulas as a motorcycle instructor and as an adventure rider instructor or dirt bike instructor. And it's like, okay, you go up a hill, you lean forward and you do throttle. And we talk about that. Or you go through a corner and I turn, I want to look through. But what occurred to me was as riders, there's so many variables. Then you have to go, well, what formula am I supposed to use? Well, how much? Well, how much am I supposed to go forward going up a hill? How far do I go out of the bike when it turns? And I started realizing we can find out if we just sense where the balance is. And the way that you do this is if you were to let go of the handlebars at any given time, what would happen to your body? And if you find yourself falling in any direction, then you're not in the best spot. You're not neutrals. That means if I'm leaning through that corner and the bike's underneath me, and this is what we do as street riders, is we're used to leaning with the motorcycle. And when there's momentum, that throws us out. It turns out the physics are the same for street or dirt. It's just we have different forces we're counteracting. Now, on the street, we go very fast. And when that motorcycle leans in the corner, it wants to stand back upright. And the farther you move to the inside of the bike, the more you neutralize that centripetal force that tries to throw you out. When we're on a trail, even when we think we're going fast, we're going very slow in comparison to a paved surface. And letting that bike roll underneath us, we have to stay up on top so that we're neutralizing the gravity that's trying to pull the bike down. Now, the slipping is the real concern. I don't mind falling. It's the slipping. What happens when that front end slips? What happens when that back end slips? You have to be in the position where the bike is going to slip into before it slips. That's really the key. As that bike leans in, especially on the DCT, not only do I want to be to the outside of that motorcycle, so my body's directly above the contact patch at a minimum, so I'm to the outside, the bike leans into the corner, but I also want to be forward and outside the bike. That way, if at any time I hit a bump, I end up with a little throttle, I end up getting knocked back slightly, that I'm not using the handlebars as a reaction to grab a hold of, because that's when we whiskey throttle. So it really is that forcing ourselves to go to the outside and up and thinking about if this motorcycle slips, where's it going to go? And I want to be on top of that spot before it actually slips. So it moves into me and I regain that control.
I think part of it too is just it's getting your brain used to that. So I've done like some practicing of going around a corner in dirt or whatever I can find, be it sand, something fairly loose. And I'm getting the hang of getting my body onto the outside of the bike. That's all well and good. But you still do occasionally have that back end start to drift a little bit. And I know that's fine. Somewhere cognitively, my brain is well aware that that's going to happen and that's totally cool. Every other part of my experience as a rider tells me I'm about to dump the bike.
Well, as a drill to help overcome that one small fear, we're talking about sand appearing on the trail and having a slip, which is different than just taking corners in deep sand. But on the one that you're talking about, where you go, hey, when that back end starts slipping and sliding, I'm going into a fight with what I know is okay versus what my body thinks is not okay. And now I'm fighting for cognitive control over the fight and flight versus I'm in control and I'm thinking through this process. Get out of the sand and do some slip and slide, do some sliding, do some rear wheel lockups where you get the bike kind of fishtailing, and it can be on anything, grass, it can be on dirt, it can be on sand. It doesn't really matter, but get those speeds up where you can just go down and just lock that rear end up and just slide the bike and get it comfortable with it. Then what you do is you start trying to deliberately kick the bike off balance. Once you get the slide stable, you lock it down, you start sliding. You want to come up with enough speed that you're going to get a good 20, 30, 40 feet of slide. So you have some time to work with, and then use the handlebars to upset the balance of the chassis and to get the bike to slide sideways just slightly. You want that fishtail. If you're not able to do that, find a spot where there's a light off camber. If you do the light off camber, when you lock up the back end, you will get sideways slide, but start slow. Don't go in and go, sure, okay, I heard what Brett said. I'm going to do this. Here we go. 50 miles an hour. I'm going to do a 150 foot skid and I'm going to slide sideways. No, no, no. Get a small section, a little place where you can lock up the back end and just get a little bit of that sideways slide. And that does two things. One, it reinforces your ability to go, this is okay. I'm not going to die. The first time you fall down, and this may happen, I'm just going to throw it out there, guys. If you're listening, falling down while you're learning, that's okay, right? That's how you find your limits. That's how you stretch your limits. Crashing is bad. Falling down is okay. But you want to reinforce that ability for your mind to go, this is okay, this is okay, this is okay. The failures you have are beneficial to you. I got into dirt bike riding because I wanted to be a better street rider. In fact, I started racing on the racetrack because I wanted to be a better street rider. That was always my focus. And I still love travel. So I still have a lot of that in me. That's how adventure travel came about. I wanted to learn how to slip and slide. I wanted to get comfortable with that loose feeling. If I hit gravel, if I hit dirt, I wanted to feel okay with it. And what I discovered is the first time that bike slipped out from underneath me, my brain went, what the heck just happened? I had no idea what just happened. I was on the bike and now I'm on the ground. But your brain is going back through and picking up all those little details. This happened, and then I felt this, and then I did this, and then I bounced on the ground. Okay. And the next time you go through, your brain picks up on it and says, hey, I recognize this just before you hit the ground. And what happens, each time you do that, it picks it up quicker and quicker and quicker until we get to the point where it's not something we're just surviving. It's something that we're doing deliberately because it's fun.
Right. Actually, it's funny in a way, because I remember a long time ago when I was a kid, I had a quad bike. And of course, that's not going to fall over. You don't have to worry about the balance aspect. But not too long after riding that, like, I was getting into just free fishtail. You get on a dirt road and just kick the back end back and forth. And I get the impression from the Africa Twin, if I wanted to, I could do that as well. I've just got to get over this block of feeling that back end do something other than be planted and not feeling like it's going to kill me in the process.
Let me share you something about the Africa Twin. Most of my riding time is on a DCT on the Africa Twin in India. That's the only model they sell there.
Yeah.
And I almost bought an Africa Twin. My big debate was, do I go with a manual and get a Recluse, or do I go DCT? And I was playing around with that. I ended up waiting for a bit. And then, of course, I went to the 790, which I don't get to ride right now because it's in the shop. Honda, that would probably never happen, but that's...
It was everything I could do not to make a commentary on that. You did buy a KTM, Brett, but anyway, sorry.
Yeah, well, we're going to see how this all plays out. But the thing I discovered about the Africa Twin, one is that DCT is so much fun to drift. The way that puts power to the ground, the way it spins up is just, it just makes me giggle. And the riding posture of that motorcycle is one of the most perfect balanced riding posture positions of any bike I've ever stood on. For my 6 foot frame, I'm 6 foot, I'm around 180 pounds, and it is absolutely ideal. I have never found a bike more fun to drift corners.
Yeah, I'm 6'4" and it fits me very well.
Yeah, it is so much fun to do that. Having that bike kick out behind you and getting up forward on the bike is just, it's a great place to be. Now, what it isn't as good at is the single track. And you were talking about going out on the single track. And when you get that Africa Twin, especially the Adventure Sports model with that big tank, that is a monstrous motorcycle on a single track trail. As long as it's moving, it's pretty good. And that's why, you know, I chose the 790s. I sold my dirt bike and I wanted to dual purpose my adventure bike for a while. That Africa Twin, when it comes to slipping and sliding and getting that bike, there is, when you finally get around to just drifting that back end, whether it's with the brakes or with power, you don't have a better motorcycle that you can do that on.
So you're saying start out, do some straight line slides, get up some speed, lock up that back wheel, see how far that goes, slowly grow that into sliding out that back wheel via braking. The next question then becomes the transition of, there's really two ways to slide out the back wheel on dirt or on soft. It could be sand or gravel, whatever. You can do it with braking or you can do it with power.
Yes.
So do you ever actually just do like a power slide on power when you're not just playing? Is there a practical aspect to it? Or are you just doing that when you're having fun?
For power slides, it's almost universally fun.
I love fun. Fun is awesome.
Yeah, it's almost universally fun. I'm just messing around, having a good time, giggling and playing. Because on these big bikes, if I'm traveling, I probably have luggage and weight. It makes it a lot harder to break the back end consistently. I don't really do that as a practical as much.
Okay.
The brake sliding, on the other hand, I do. If I have to turn around on a tight trail, I can slide that bike halfway around. It's half the turn now. It's not a U-turn, it's a turn from a stop. If I'm coming down a trail or down a road and there's a tight turn at the bottom, I can lock up that back end and slide the bike so as it comes down, it stops square, pointing the direction I want to go. There are a lot of times I do like sliding the back end. I can justify it as a practical use, but as far as power slides, for me, that's mostly confidence and giggle factor.
I was morbidly curious because I know you can do it and I've done it a couple of times by accident. And after I pulled over, caught my breath and realized I was still alive after doing it, I was wondering if there was something practical to that. So coming back around, turning on sand or loose traction, really loose traction environments. Let's talk about that.
Let's get into one very specific. Since sand is kind of our underlying theme here. Let's stick with sand and let's get ourselves out of the patch sand or the surface sand, and get ourselves into the really deep, nasty stuff. Turning on sand, you can turn, but we don't really turn in the sense like when we're on solid ground. We turn like a boat on the water. It's more like you cut in. You have to turn, and it has to take time. Also, you have to keep that front end up on top of the sand. The rear needs to keep moving, so you have power going forward, but that front end, you want to keep up on top. When the front end buries into the sand, that's when we bite it. When our weight shifts too far forward, then that front end can bury because it can't self-center, it can't self-correct, and we fall down. If I roll off the throttle and the weight pitches forward, the front end can bury, and then because it's constantly doing that left and right, even when you're turning, that front end is still doing a little oscillation as it goes. That's when the body position stuff starts changing. We mentioned on a surface sand where we're waiting for a patch or we're not sure if we're going to slide, that we kind of move forward on that Africa Twin and we move to the outside of the bike, kind of moving up and over the corner of the tank. In deep sand, I can't really do that because now I'm weighting the front end too much. I'm going to bury that front end in. Now I need to get farther back on the bike. And what I do is I generally use my knees and I wedge into the seat. So as I lean back on the motorcycle, I'm not holding on with the handlebars. That's a major no-no.
Yeah, that actually answers the question that's going to come out of that, which is if you have to move your weight really far back to keep it up off the nose of the bike, are you not kind of falling apart on the whole weightless rider thing? Because it seems your next natural thing is going to be to put back weight on your handlebars.
Remember, the weightless rider thing comes back to that concept that I believe in, which is as a rider, we're in three states of action. We're either proactive, we're active, or reactive. And we can only move from one to the next. Anytime I'm riding in the moment, I'm active, which means my next state is reactive, which is what happens just before we crash. So my goal is to always be in that proactive state. In a very deep sand, especially turning sand, my anticipation, what I think is about to happen, is that I'm going to get a sudden slowing in the sand, especially during turning. You hit a large ridge or kind of a deep spot, you fall into a little bit of a trough, and the motorcycle can slow relatively rapidly and more than you expect. That throws you forward. If you're already in a neutral position where you're really there and you're like, yeah, I can let go, I'm perfect, I'm in the middle, when that happens, you're going to be thrown forward on the bike. You're no longer in balance. You're out of position. I mean, that's what dabbing's about. Dabbing's about getting back into position. Now we have a problem. That balance point that I talk about isn't a fine pinpoint spot. When you're here, the bike is perfectly balanced. It's an area. There's a region that you can be in. I see this all the time when we're standing up riding. Oh, well, I'm standing straight up, I'm balanced. Yes, but you ride on the back edge of balance. The first time you hit a bump, you're back. If you lean slightly forward, you're still balanced. But now when you hit a bump, you're still in that area of balance. And that's what we're doing in the sand is I'm going to go all the way to the back edge. I'm going to get as far back on that bike as I can get and still be in some balance or just even maybe just slightly outside of it. So when I get that sudden slowing, I'm not thrown forward. And I need to be light on the handlebars because those are trying to track the ground. And if I have my hands gripped around the handlebars, we're hosed.
Right. You'll be fighting it because it's going to want to wiggle and fight its own course through the sand.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. People believe they have to be in control. In fact, they think they're in control. We're not in control. You ride a 500-600-pound motorcycle through the sand, the bike's in control. You're making suggestions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. I think the part where I struggle the most is just trying to figure out what that balance point actually means. Now I get kind of on the cognitive level, as we mentioned before, that, okay, I know I'm about to get into some deep sand. So let's go ahead and start to get the weight back. The bike is going to hit that sand and I'm going to feel some G forces pull me back forward. That's all fine and good. I now know though that like, as I start to move across this sand, I got to keep that weight back and I can only do that so much because eventually, you know, like we're not accelerating anymore. So there's nothing to fight against. So are you like locking your knees on the seat and just kind of using your leg strength to stay leaned back? Cause you shouldn't be doing it with your hands, right? Does this make sense?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I do. One is with motocross boots, it makes it a lot easier,
right?
If people are wearing adventure boots and anytime you see a boot that says adventure on it, what that says is this is a really nice touring boot that looks like a dirt bike boot. That's kind of what that label means. But if you're in a motocross boot or a very heavy, heavy duty boot, that lock-in helps you out tremendously because you're locked in not just at the knees, but you can wedge back against the back edge of the foot pegs. Mm-hmm. And then that wedges you into the seat. And then, yeah, you've got to have just a little bit of strength at the quads to kind of hold your body as you're hanging out just behind your knees. But it shouldn't be much. I mean, we should not be burning muscle. If you come out and your legs are smoked, something's either you really need to hit the gym or chances are you're doing something wrong. I mean, it's
right.
I teach lazy riding. I believe in energy conservation, conserve my energy. Let's face it, we're not young guys in this sport. If you're in your 50s, you're at the top of the bell curve and it drifts off left and right from there into the 40s on one side and 60s on the other. And yeah, we have to have a little bit of strength, but the biggest thing is being smart and learning how to wedge, learning how to lean against the motorcycle in different places so you don't hold onto the handlebars. But no, you're absolutely correct. I do angle my feet and my boots so that I end up pinning myself on the back edge of the foot pegs and usually against a soft part of the seat.
That makes sense. A lot of the things that you read and a lot of the videos that you watch on trying to grow these techniques don't focus very much on how you're using the bike itself as a tool of leverage. They talk a lot about keeping your balance, staying within a certain like cone of balance or keeping yourself perpendicular to the earth as you lean the bike. Like there's all kinds of fun things you learn, but there are little nuances to making those motions real on your particular motorcycle that I think can be a little tricky to feel unless you've actually tried it or ask somebody like you.
And I think I'm unique within the industry. I know a lot of instructors and, you know, I've been doing this for 24 years, full-time motorcycle instruction and riding for quite a bit longer, of course. I look for those little nuances and details of the things we're doing. You can find some absolutely phenomenal, incredible, talented riders, but they cannot articulate the small details of what they're doing. Paul, the one of the other instructors, my right-hand man, Paul was, he always comes back to the whole gymnast thing. You know, if you look at these gymnasts, these Olympics, these are young girls doing a lot of this. And there's some big fat Russian guy that's coaching them. He can't do anything they can do, not a thing, but he can see the details. He can provide them guidance on how to improve. And that's what I've always focused on for myself is I don't have to be better than other people. I don't have to be the best rider. I have to be good at making other people better than they are. And that's one of the reasons I was concerned, to be honest, when I started doing the Moto Trek series. You know, if I do this, why would anybody come to a school with me? Why would anybody come and do one of the adventure tours with me if I'm giving all my secrets away? Because I give away a lot of small details. And what happened, of course, is more people want to come. And it's because although you can know what you're supposed to do, you can hear what you're supposed to do, but have somebody see you and identify the small nuances that you're missing, or what you need to modify because of your body type or your physical ailments or limitations and how to work around those. And that's what keeps me interested. That's why I'm still doing this. That's why I like working with old guys on adventure bikes, because we're not smart enough to give it up. We have too much money to be smart about it. So we go out and buy these adventure bikes and everybody has a story. Everybody's got a bad something, a missing something, history. They bought a bike too tall. They bought a bike too small. There is something. And it's fun because I have to work really hard to help each individual overcome those specific challenges. And that's what I really enjoy.
I am waiting to hear when your next schedule's popping up. I actually would have tried to get in there this year, but of course things happen. But no, I really want to be able to have a ride where somebody who knows what they're doing and can articulate it can ride along next to me and go like, okay, well, here's where you screwed up, or here's where you're struggling, or here's what you're fighting against. I definitely see the value in that sort of thing.
You mentioned the schedule, and I'm just about ready to post up. By the time anybody hears this, that schedule will be posted up, and they'll always find it on my website, you know, thebretttax.com. I'm doing extra camp next year, so I'm not just doing two, I'm doing three. I still have we're limited on our time that we don't have snow in the high mountains, so I still only have a couple of training tours each year that I do here in Washington. But I'm also looking to try to do things in the winter, and I love travel. I love international travel. This year in February, I'm doing the Nepal tour, and I've got a couple of spots. I lost a few people due to COVID, not like they passed away, but, you know, work and schedules. And, you know, we had to move it from November to February. And so that just didn't work for everybody. Yeah. But the idea was to really give people a chance not to put a curricula out, not to come out and say, hey, I'm going to teach you how to do all these different things. And most of these, all but one of the riders going right now is a former student of mine. As soon as they heard I'm going, they're like, I'm in, let's go. And what they know is that the goal is, let's go have a good time, let's adventure. And if there's a challenge, if there's a specific challenge, let's work our way through it. And that's the value to them. And doing that in an environment where we get to explore a very unique country, where we're getting out of our comfort zone for what's here at home, I'm dying to do that more often. And I'm also looking at possibilities of trying to do a few things elsewhere in the U.S. I used to train over on the East Coast a lot. We just lost our contract for the military. I did a mentor training. So we would travel all over the country training special forces guys. We just lost that contract. I was like, oh, that makes sense. We're spending all this money on COVID. It turns out Captain Kirk took my money. So it sounds like the Space Force that was just stood up, everybody yeah. has to put into the pot, and we got trimmed off of that. But the good news for those that are interested in doing things with me, especially for adventure riding, is it really frees up a ton of time that I couldn't free up in the summer. to do other training events or in the winter to try to get out and offer some different events. So I'm hoping to have more stuff, but also do some special stuff. You know, do a day where we just go out in the mud. I did a class years ago called Mission Impassable. And it sounds as much fun as it is. Our goal was to go out and get stuck and work our way through it. And what techniques and what methods and how do we work together to get through this challenge of the day? And it was set up to be progressively more challenging with different things that we should be able to get through with technique. And then to the point where we were shoveling out a rutted road because the 1200 GSs didn't fit. They would drive it and their cylinder heads would wedge into the mud walls. It was an absolute hoot. So I'm hoping to be able to offer that kind of stuff here in the future.
I feel like I do that kind of thing in my Jeep all the time. Eventually fall back on my winch, and I don't have one of those on my motorcycle yet.
You are certainly one of the individuals that may benefit if you could ever find one of those worn winches. Because when we first spoke, you reached out to me, you know, your bike's nicknamed the Lawn Dart.
Yes.
And I saw the video that you put online of you riding through that park. And sure enough, it looked like, oh, that's a nice soft sand field and we'll just go to the other side. And your bike just instantly stopped.
I mean, it was a storage pit.
Yeah, it was buried past the fender.
Yep. So that sucked, by the way. But you know what? I think the big takeaway from that is don't ever just go up over a berm if you don't know where you are. Because I didn't really know what was on the other side. I was hot and I was miserable and I came up over the top and yeah, you come over and you're like, oh, okay, it's just some sand. I'll be fine. And boom, bike just comes to a dead halt.
Sometimes we lose sight of the reality when we're watching these movies or reading magazines and you see pictures and let's face it, the most glorious video is always the worst technique. If you cross a water crossing perfectly and you can stay up on the feet and you know how to manage your clutch and you pick the right speed, it just doesn't look exciting. And that was one of the issues, Tim, when we were making the motorcycle. He goes, yeah, can you make it more exciting? I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to crash to make a video. Forget it.
Can you do it on your back wheel? And
yeah, can you make it look harder? I'm like, well, no, that's kind of not the point here. Well, I think the takeaways for those that are listening is there's several different things that we have to overcome. This is just kind of a review of what we talked about, which is one is we need to understand where we are on the motorcycle and gain more experience and just repetition. The more we repeat, the better we are at predicting what's about to happen, whether it's sand or gravel, and getting up into that weightless rider spot, finding ways to wedge yourself on the motorcycle so you're not holding on to the handlebars. Your hands are always loose. You're only touching the handlebars to touch the controls. The bike will want to balance itself, whether we're turning in deep sand, whether we're turning on light sand, it wants to keep going through. And then the last thing is we need to become comfortable being just a little uncomfortable. If you're always in your comfort zone, you're never going to push yourself over that limit. If you don't want to slide the tire, you better start trying just short skids and then longer skids and then longer. If you're not constantly challenging yourself and just to the near limit, not blowing through the limit, but just right up on that edge until you can become comfortable and understand and respond and predict and then push it just a little bit more.
I will ask you this though. When you hear people talk about sand and gravel and all this, you always hear the same phrase. And I think to a new rider, it sounds great, but it doesn't make the most sense. Everybody says, steer with your feet.
Oh, do we have to do that? That's in another entire 45-minute chat.
Okay.
But let's just get back that there are, I'm going to address that, but I'm going to address it. I'm going to address it, but let's just keep it. It's not just the feet. It happens for on-road riding. You know, guys are like, okay, hang off the bike and you drop your knee. If you take like the Motorcycle Safety Foundation, they have a class called the Advanced Rider Course. And they say, okay, so when you corner, you want to go in and down or wrist to chin. So you're supposed to go forward on the bike and lean where your wrist is over your chin. The problem is none of those actually explain what you're trying to accomplish. Right. If I go wrist over chin to hang off, if I'm on a sport bike and I move down and inside the bike into the proper position, I'll be there. But if I do that same technique on an adventure bike, it's wrong because you're not accomplishing the physical aspects that are supposed to happen. And weighting the feet is the same thing. If I'm on a motorcycle and I'm trying to make the bike turn and I want to stay up on top of the bike rolls underneath me. if I lean to the outside of the motorcycle and all of my weight is on the outside foot, then I'm going to say, oh, I'm weighting the outside foot. But in reality, what I've done is I've rotated and should actually be your outside knee, but we'll come back to, you know, some other talk, I'll address that. Just because of where I put my body, I'm going to feel pressure on that foot. But in a different scenario or a different rider, they may not shift out. They may use their inside foot to push themselves to that position, therefore saying, oh, I'm weighting the inside foot. So it's not actually about weighting either foot. That is a symptom of what we're trying to accomplish. And we get a lot of that kind of advice from riders. Hey, do this. And it may be true partially. Here's an example happened to me. So I attended Shane Watts. Shane Watts is a ISDE champion. He does a off-road school called Dirtwise. Highly recommend it. It is not for adventure riders. It is strictly a dirt bike school. I've spent years and years and years training street riders, and I'm always talking about where to put your eyes. Get your eyes up, look through the corner. Don't look where you're at. You want to look where you want to go. And this is something most of us are probably familiar. Anybody listening to this podcast is probably educated enough that they've heard you want to look where you want to go. And Shane yelled at me because I was looking too far through the corner. Like, what are you talking about? That's where I want to go. He goes, yeah, but that's not where you want your bike to be now, where your tire is. He had to teach me to look into the rut that I was riding into because I was going to berm ride. So yeah, I would look through the corner, but I would then use my eyes to target my wheel placement by looking into the rut, placing my tire there. And then once the bike started to drive, then I could pick my eyes up and look down the straightaway. I had to untrain something. Right. I was just going based on what I was taught, and it all made sense to me. But in that environment, in that moment, that wasn't the right technique. And if we're missing details, if we're missing elements, if we change the environment, we have to change the way we think of the things that we do, which is why I don't like teaching formulas. That's why I like teaching what's going on. What are the dynamics of you, the rider, in the land, so you can adapt those as those different environments and situations change.
And I'm sorry to bring up a totally different, well, I mean, it's a related topic. I wasn't trying to get us off into a whole other thing, but we just got done talking about how great you are with articulating things. And nobody has ever really explained that. It feels very relative. Folks say, I'm weighting the outside and I'll try to do that, but it feels like I pushed off from the inside. And so there's always a weird trade-off in there somewhere.
Well, and coming back to the sand thing, oh, you will add throttle. Everybody's heard that from somebody, whether they believe it or not.
Well, and the other side of that too is I feel like a lot of those types of advice you get, like add throttle or whatever, start to fade away once you're playing on a DCT bike. Because a lot of those add throttle things come with the caveat of, but if you add too much, be ready to grab your clutch and pull some of that power back off the back wheel. And you don't always have that option on every motorcycle out there.
And that's where the DCT as a modification, the number one thing I'd be looking for is a rear handbrake. I know that Recluse was in the process of making one for the DCT.
Last I don't think it's looked, out yet.
Yeah, last I looked, I didn't see it. That's what would make that bike perfect, is just having that rear handbrake. Because where normally we add throttle and then we feed the power out with the clutch, what you would end up doing on the DCT and what I end up doing, except you have to use the foot brake. Because anybody listening, know the parking brake on the left hand grip is not a rear brake. That's not what we're talking. We're talking about a precise, powerful handbrake that you could use to finally control the release of power. Because what happens on the DCT is you put power into the transmission, so it goes to the back wheel, and then you feed that power out by releasing the brake. All your slow maneuvering skills, all your detail skills that we normally use a clutch for on DCT, you end up using the brake instead. Well, you have any other questions for me?
What I could use more than anything, or like, I need ideas for drills. I need practical things that I can go out and do, because I don't have the option right now of getting training. It's not a thing in the world we live in right now. I need things that I can do that will start to build up that muscle memory. And I can come up with a few, but hearing them is always good too.
First of all, anytime you ride the bike doing sand or low speed U-turn stuff, if you can put a camera on yourself, it's always a win. Because when you see it right and you see it wrong, you're more likely to be able to identify that. But when you're on the motorcycle, you can't sense it.
You mean separate from me, like tripod
or elsewhere? Exactly. Tripod or a friend or something where you can really critique yourself. And that can be a huge benefit. In fact, I've had a few people send me videos out of India and stuff going, hey, I just can't figure this out. And they've sent it. And I'm like, oh, well, do this, this, and this. And they'll send follow-up videos. And I don't try to share that too much because that's
no, it's not scalable. Yeah, it's not scalable. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, unless people were paying for individual, and I'm just not trying to push that. You know, that's not my thing. But so definitely video, personal video.
Yeah.
Anything that allows you to get comfortable with the movement and the sliding. So definitely the inline brake sliding. The sand, just going through sand over and over and over and over so that you can get a database of experience. When you see something, what's going to happen? How experienced is it? For you, some of the low speed maneuvers, doing things where you use trees or even put out cones on the ground and going around them, low speed stuff, things that are very, very technical, because with the DCT, that's one of the hardest crossovers. At speed, the DCT, most riders will do better on a DCT than a regular bike. But at low speed, that's where you start going, man, it would be kind of nice to have a clutch. So you have to learn that change. So I would do some low speed, really getting to use that modulation, the brake and the brake release with the throttle over the top of it. Mm-hmm. The other one that I would suggest is the one that I mentioned that I do, which is the hands-off activities. And any chance you get where you, because you don't have, well, you do have cruise control.
I do have cruise control.
Oh, yeah, you're set.
The bike is very fancy.
Yeah, you're set. That's why, actually, that's the reason I didn't buy the Africa Twin 1000. Cruise control was a deal breaker for me. But if you can get out on the road, I do street cornering, like 15, 20 mile an hour corners, hands off, where I'm going down these hills where there's S turns, one after the other, after the other. But they're all evolution of understanding the balance of the bike, making sure my body's in the right place and understand it. So downhill's easy. You can just kind of coast down the hills, use your rear brake for speed control so you don't touch the handlebars. When you have cruise control, it's nice because you can set it on roads and actually ride them. Probably not something I should recommend to everybody to do.
I get it.
But anytime
I've done it on the street because the bike is actually incredibly well balanced when you're moving. I put my hands up on the tank just to kind of see how it works. And I think I got that idea. Watch, you were doing a video where you had a GoPro apparently on your face and you were talking with your hands.
Yes.
And I was like, I wonder if I could do that. And yeah, I can get pretty far and I can shift my hips and I can get the bike to wiggle back and forth and all that.
But the question,
I haven't tried that on the dirt.
Yeah, but can you take a 90-degree turn?
No, sir. No, absolutely not. And I could do one on my mountain bike, but my mountain bike is not 600 pounds and is not powered by a 100-horsepower engine.
And that's when you start getting that trust, is when you start taking, it's again, getting out of that comfort. Most of us can go straight. We can wiggle back and forth, go, yeah, this bike is stable. Can you do the same thing in a corner? Downhill, uphill, dirt, street. Street's usually better to start with that. But definitely getting into that position where, again, going through a little bit of sand and seeing, can you go through it with hands off? If you're going down like a regular dirt road, it's got a nice patch of sand in it, not like deep, massive sand, just something that makes a bike squiggle and squirm just a tad. Can you ride through it with your hands off? Will you still trust the motorcycle? And the more trust you get, the more you realize, and this is the real value, the more you realize that you don't have to control it, the more you can relax and you can plan ahead and you can get proper suggestions to the bike. But as long as we think we're in control and we're holding on tight, we're the only reason it's not falling down. And in fact, it's probably the opposite. That's when you're still always going to be in kind of that novice state. You'll never quite get to that Zen master rider state. So I would focus on doing those kind of activities, the ones that really get you into that squirm, that squiggle. The other ones you can do is doing a lot of narrow track riding. Put down a 2x6. Ride the length of a 2x6. Ride the length of a 2x4. Stack those 2x6s. I used to make drills where they were maybe 2x6s tall, and I would ramp them like two inch overlap, where you'd ride up it and down it and up it and down it on the same 14-foot 2x6 or 2x8. Do that same thing and then pause in the middle and then keep going. Because if you miss it, you just ride off the edge. It doesn't hurt anything. You're not going to fall. You're not going to get hurt. But the first time you do that, your brain goes, oh, this is really scary. If you and I were to put 2x4s out and go, let's walk across this. Don't touch anything. Balance on the 2x4. You and I would both do that successfully. No problem. Now, elevate it a foot and put some cinder blocks underneath it. How well will you do it? Now raise it 10 feet over a pool. Now raise it 10 feet over concrete. Now put it 100 feet in the air. And what you'll find is that board has never changed.
Yeah.
But our ability to be successful does. And so that's what we're trying to do, is become so comfortable, so competent. But if you go over that board enough times at any elevation, you'll eventually become comfortable with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now that the temperature is no longer in the triple digits, I want to go back out to that park that I shot that video and get a little more practice out there. But they also have a junior motocross track that they'll let me take laps on if I want to. So it's got some nice up and down. You don't have to get air on it if you don't want to. But what I'm really interested in taking is they got a lot of the high banked turns.
Mm-hmm.
That are really gnarly, deep sand, grit, mud, dirt at the bottom. You know, it's MX stuff. I'd love to see if I could actually make it through that without laying the bike over too many times, but that's coming soon.
Well, let me know how it goes. Yeah. Seriously. No, let me know how it goes. It should be interesting. And it was fun watching your video going through. And
watch that?
I watched parts of it. I didn't sit down with popcorn and watch the whole thing, but I watched little sections. Basically, I was looking for your lawn dart.
Yeah. So I tried to put in the description, like, just here's a link to the end if you just want to watch me do something really dumb on my motorcycle.
Yeah. But yeah, I wanted to see the lawn dart, and I was like, oh, wow, that really does look pretty mundane as you approach. And of course, cameras always flatten everything out. Nothing ever looks as gnarly on camera as it does in the real world. I'm aware of that. But yeah, it didn't look all that freaky. And I'm like, okay, so you probably saw a little more of the wave and the silt on it than I did. But yeah, I certainly didn't see anything that would just go, hey, sudden stop.
Yeah, so no, it just coming over the top, like I looked down and it's almost like the world goes into freeze frame and you okay, so this is a sandy plain, no big deal. You could even see some footprints in it, but I had no idea that I was going to do that.
That was fantastic picture though. Fantastic picture.
Yep.
Zach, I really appreciated you coming on to Around the Wheel and having this chat about sand and talking about the Africa Twin. I think the people listening, hopefully they'll enjoy some of the stories or at least giggle at some of the things that we came up with. And hopefully we gave them some things to work on as well. Everybody listening, again, the Around the Wheel, every first and third Thursday of the month, as long as I can keep it up and I have people doing this. All of my guests are coming from Patreon. These are supporters at the fan club and above. Some magnificent people coming on with experienced world travelers, pilots. And I think one of the most valuable talks so far has been Zach, who is just coming to the table, is going, look, I'm an experienced rider. I rode as a kid. I've ridden Harleys. Adventure bikes are none of the above. And how do I keep myself upright? How do I not get myself hurt? And Zach, thank you again for coming on to the show.
Brett, thank you so much for taking the time to talk through this and the videos you're making. All of your efforts, they're greatly appreciated. Please don't stop.